Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Hopefully, everybody had a great weekend. Like I told you last week, this Saturday was a work day for me. I checked cameras, very happy with the results there. Nothing extremely huge, but I'd say about four deer on camera that are at least 4 years old or older, a couple that I feel are older than four, and then a solid group of up-and-coming two and three-year-olds. I hung three stands, full-blown trim-outs. I went in to other stands that were already up, where just the hang-on was up. I put my sticks up. I went in and made sure that the straps were still good. I loosened them up, then tightened them back up again. And long story short, it was a really worthwhile experience to get out there and break a sweat for something that's going to be coming in the fall, because as you all know, I have a kid coming in September, which means October I won't be able to hunt as much. With that said, it's good to go into the rutcation 100% prepared, and I'm looking at my Huntera Magnum map that I have on the wall right now, and it looks like I have 5 stands hung and ready to go, minus a couple sticks so that people can't just walk up and steal them. And I have some trail cameras in place, and the next time that I go to my farm will be sometime in August, and I'll check trail cameras probably one more time early August, and then late August I'll go in again and do the trail camera switch, where I take them off the mineral stations and I put them in the pinch points and travel corridors, and I'll have a couple extra left behind. That way I can move those trail cameras to any scrapes or any areas that I see a lot of sign. And other than that, I think we're good to go. You know, there's always more that a guy can do, but I like to keep my options open when it comes to, I don't know, the strategy, because just like last year, I know that I'll be running and gunning at some point. It's good to have the historic tree stands set and in the historically good pinch points, travel corridors, bedding areas. But as we all know, patterns change, deer movement is at times random, and that's why we have to be mobile. So there's my kind of update for that. Today's podcast with Brian Landry, he's going to talk about his run and gun hunting setup and some modifications that he has done to that setup to make it quieter, make it more efficient for his hunting style. But before we get into today's podcast, Fred Dougherty of Wasp Archery talks to us a little bit about why any serious bow hunter should consider wasp broadheads.
A hardcore bow hunter should consider wasp broadheads because we have a long history of producing some of the finest and toughest broadheads in the industry. All our heads have the same signature trocar tip, which is solid stainless steel, which no one else in the industry does. We harden it, then we grind it to its trocar shape. The tips are pressed into place onto solid material, solid aluminum or steel ferrules. We never have put any pins or screws or, you know, tiny little nicks or marks in the broadhead that causes weak spots. And all of our broadheads are 100% made in the USA.
If you want to find out more information about Wasp broadheads. Visit wasparchery.com. Do some research, find out what head is right for you in your hunting situation, and then enter the code 9FINGERS. That's the number 9 followed by the word fingers when you decide to purchase those broadheads, and that will give you a discount of 20%. So that's a pretty good deal. 20% off broadheads is kind of a no-brainer, especially badass ones like Wasp. Now, let's get into today's, I don't even know what to call it. It's kind of a BS session, but it's also kind of a walkthrough of how Brian Landry modifies his run-and-gun setup. So we'll just call it a BS session for all intents and purposes, and I hope you guys enjoy. All right, on the phone with me now is Brian Landry. How you doing today, Brian?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. So what's going on in Louisiana, my friend?
Just swatting mosquitoes and dealing with the heat.
Yeah. I tell you what, I was down, this was a while ago, but I was down in New Orleans several years ago. And down there, I don't know how far south you are in Louisiana.
I'm about 45 minutes north of New Orleans.
Okay, 45 minutes north of New Orleans. I was sweating so much, I would carry a backpack around full of dry t-shirts. So when I would walk outside, when I was down there, I would sweat in like 5-10 minutes. I would sweat through my shirts, take one off, put the dry one on, then go inside. And then whenever I'd just have that rotation going until all my shirts were gone. And then I had to go to either buy some at some of those shops or, but long story short, it's hot and it is humid down there. Is that, has anything changed?
No, it's pretty nasty. Pretty nasty. So are you telling me if I move to Iowa, I not only get into the big bucks, I also don't have to sweat as much?
Well, I don't know about that. It was 93 degrees here today and it was still humid. It's almost like you got to change your drawers when you get home. That's how humid it was.
You're depressing me.
Yeah, I know. I know, but I tell you what, it gets cold in the winter and in the fall, and we still have the big bucks.
Yeah, that's plus.
Hey, but I've talked to some guys from Louisiana who run into some pretty big deer down there.
We do have big deer in certain areas.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about the area that you hunt and what it's like down there.
I actually don't do a whole lot of hunting in Louisiana. I do most of my hunting in Mississippi, which is about a 3-hour one-way commute for me. I hunt right off of the Mississippi River. I guess in kind of the area considered the Delta region, which is known for producing bigger bucks than, I guess, normal in Louisiana, Mississippi.
Right. And again, I've heard some guys, you know, say that same thing. I actually think I did a podcast with a guy from Mississippi a while back about hunting in that Delta. So the hunting for you is so significant that you're willing to drive 3 hours one direction just to hunt that that area on a yearly basis?
Correct. I actually have about 60,000 acres of public land, about 10 to 15 minutes from my house, but it's some of the nastiest swamp, I guess, there is.
Yeah.
When I say swamp, you know, it's not really accessible by hip boots and waders. It's more boat accessible and then hip boots and waders.
Gotcha. How is that by Lake Pontchartrain then, north of that yet?
Correct. It's the North Shore Lake Pontchartrain, North Shore Lake Maurepas.
Man, I tell you what, I watched an online video today of a guy hunting in a Louisiana swamp, and he was walking to his tree stand in standing water. The deer were walking in standing water. So that just blows me away how these deer are literally living in standing, these whitetails are literally living in standing water probably almost all year round.
Yeah, and they really do pretty well in it. The major impact down here is the hurricanes and the tidal influx can really put a hurting on the herd quick.
Really? They just don't have anywhere to go once they get that deep in there?
Right, right. And the plus side of it is, of course, pressure's limited.
Right.
Nobody really wants to go through the headache. And honestly, the areas are really only accessible about 3 months out of the year because of the vegetation growth. You got about 3 months where you got some die-off and you can actually access some areas.
Right, right. Other than that, it's just a jungle.
Yeah, yeah. Man, nasty, nasty.
That's
wet
crazy.
Jungle.
And yet they...
Snakes, mosquitoes, spiders, everything that bites.
No, thanks. I think I'll stick to my maybe running into a raccoon on the way to the tree stand.
Yeah, yeah.
So today, actually, before we get into that, how was your 2016 season then?
I've had better. I wound up filling a tag on February 14th, which was the second to last day of the season. Just put a little meat in the freezer. Yeah. Other than that, it was pretty slim pickings.
Right. So when you go on to this public ground over in Mississippi, are you looking for anything in particular? Are you doing a lot of running and gunning? What's your strategy kind of like?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of running and gunning. My kind of criteria is I'm looking for a buck 120 inches or better. And I don't really look to fill any doe tags. It's just I'm kind of going there for that size deer in mind, or I'll just eat my tags.
Right. So, is that some like 120 is your goal? Is that as long as it's a 120 class, it doesn't matter what age it is. Or, does maturity play a role in that at all?
Well, a 120 is going to be around 3 years old, or at least put it this way. I hadn't had a whole lot of two-year-olds. It's 130 on camera. So, maturity-wise, you're looking at a three, more than likely four-year-old deer.
Okay. And is that something that year after year you end up running into down there?
You know, I probably the year before last, I had two opportunities. Last year, I zeroed. So... You know, my time is kind of limited going that far. I have a full-time job. I do the stick talons on the side, and I have three kids. So
it's
limited. You know, so if I get out or if I get to Mississippi 20, 25 hunts a year, I can look at running into maybe one or two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's definitely tough. I got my, like you, everybody knows, I got my third kid coming down the pipe here pretty soon. And, I know that I doubt I'm going to hunt very much in October. I think I'm just going to save as much brownie points as I can for my vacation and just kind of try to play it as smart as possible and not over hunt and try to make the wife happy all at the same time, if that's even possible.
Yeah, that would be wise. I tell everybody, the problem is when you go from two to three, you go from running that man-to-man to have to run a zone defense.
Oh, yeah.
Tough.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, I hear that. Someone's always going to be open for the shot, right?
Right, right, right. You're just scrambling to catch up.
It was kind of funny. This is going to sound mean, but we were eating supper tonight, and my son got down. We had spaghetti, and my son got down out of his chair and he started running. And when he runs out of the kitchen, the first thing he does is he takes a hard left and he runs right towards the couch every time. And he tries to belly flop on the couch and then he climbs up on it. Well, previous experience tells me that anything that is on his mouth or on his hands is going on the couch. So he gets out of there and I couldn't catch him because I was in the kitchen. So I had to jump the couch and literally kind of push him over. And so I pushed him kind of hard, but I had to save the couch, right? So,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, been there, done that, man.
Let's see here. All right, so today we are going to be talking about, modifications to the tree stand. And it's something that you approached me about in an email a while back, and that we're just now getting to the podcast because of some reschedules. But this is something that I've been thinking a lot of about my run and gun setup, what I need to do, how I need to do it, how to make it as, for me, the most important thing is a quiet setup and teardown. I'm not too concerned about weight because I literally don't have to do much walking in and out. But that's all beside the point. So you sent me a list of things that you do to your tree stands. And I think we just start at the top. And let's talk about one of the first things that you did a while back, and that's paracord. Talk to us about that.
Right. I wrap the perimeter of my assault in paracord mainly for quieting. You know, you're walking through the woods, hitting brush, or when you're hanging at the accidental bump of a buckle. It quiets it down, but it's got the durability. It's a raw pain to lace 100 foot of paracord around, but once it's done, it's never going anywhere.
Right. Right.
And it kind of gives you a little bit of a better grip when you're holding the stand to hang it. You kind of got a like a raised grip that it creates. And I know Garrett, DIY Sportsman, has talked about it in the past. If you use a larger diameter rope on the front, you can actually get that feel for it underneath your foot. So you know when you're running to the edge.
Right. So is that something that over time, when I think of paracord, I think of kind of a fabric-y, over time would wear, especially if it's something that you're tearing up and setting down over the course of, you know, 15 times a season, times that by, you know, 5 years. Have you had to replace that paracord at all?
I'm 3 years in, and you really can't tell that there's any wear on it.
Okay.
Of course, I'm packing in and out every hunt, though, so you don't get the sun deterioration, but it's pretty durable stuff.
Gotcha. Now, from a quieting standpoint, obviously, it's going to quiet it down quite a bit. Over time, does that paracord separate from one another and allow dirt and, I don't know, you know, more space?
No, the way it's actually put on is it's cobra weaved on, so there's some separation there.
Gotcha.
To begin with, yeah, you'll get mud and dirt in there that just it falls off. It's not really an issue.
Okay, so before we started recording, and when we talked about this, you mentioned that you would not do paracord again. Why is that?
You're looking at about a 3-hour job, three blisters per hand, and a 12-pack of beer to get the whole perimeter of just an assault done.
Right. So the 3 hours is not worth it in the long run?
The durability is great, but I've had a lot of experience with Stealth Strip. I actually use them on all my brackets for my stick talons that I make.
Right.
And if I had to do it over again, I would call Uncle Lou and get a tree stand kit. The Stealth Strip, you can probably get 3 to 5 years out of it and cut 2 hours off of the project.
Gotcha. And get the same results from
get the same results. You're going to get the same quietness. You might not get as much grip to it, but you're definitely going to get not the cold to the touch or hot to the touch. You get that felt feel with the Stealth Strip, and the quieting, you know, capabilities is going to be right up there with paracord.
Okay. And then, so have you had to replace your Stealth Stripping at all?
The Stealth Strip I found on little smaller items like some buckles and hooks on my rock climbing harness.
Yeah.
When it gets wet, I've had issues with it. sticks and stands. My seat post is in Stelstrip, and all my sticks are in Stelstrip. All my brackets on my stick talons are in Stelstrip, and I've yet to replace anything.
Right. Okay. So it's for the most part that those stealth strips are pretty durable.
Pretty durable, come at a decent price, and application is way smoother than paracord. And you know, once you stick it, you kind of forget it with Stelstrip. It's not really like a camo duct tape or hockey tape or anything. I would say it's way more durable, and the sticking to it is better.
Gotcha. All right. So all that combined, everything that you just mentioned, and we're going to get into some more silencing techniques here in a second. Does that add a lot of weight to the stand, or is it barely noticeable?
You know, the Stelstrip, that's another benefit. It's going to be lighter. You're looking at 100 foot of paracord, probably weighs a half a pound to almost a pound. So you are adding weight, but, you know, the paracord's got multiple uses. You know, say you down a deer, need to hang it in a tree or something, you got 100 foot of paracord on your stand at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had to use it like that in that scenario?
I have cut some off before to tie some branches back, but I've yet to hang a deer with it.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, so you know, we've talked about the paracord, we've talked about something like the stealth strips for the bracket. Me personally, I've never purchased any stealth strips, and I say that I say yet. Because it's something that I'm looking into. But I have taken this really thick hockey tape and black and green combination and wrapped it all the way around. Now, I know a lot of guys out there are going to say, oh, you just wait till, you know, the first time it gets wet and it's going to start rolling on you and peeling, and then it's going to just be a sticky mess. I guess I didn't think about that, but I have noticed that it still does quiet the sticks. I put it on my sticks and on the base of one of my running gun stands, or not the base, but the seat, the vertical bracket that runs from the platform to the seat. And it does do a pretty good job of quieting it down.
How long have you been running it?
Just this last year, which was literally a 2-day hunt.
Gotcha.
Before I shot my buck, I haven't, you know, I haven't put it through the ringer yet, so to speak.
I've used the camo Gorilla tape. I've used bicycle inner tube. I've used gutted paracord, and then finally stuck with the Stelstrip.
Right.
The bicycle inner tube is cheap and it does a great job. However, you get the squeak on rubber boots.
Right. I hear that. And obviously that's something that you're wearing to hunt every day down there.
Pretty much. Either rubber knee boots or hip boots.
Okay. So the next thing on your list here is the tubular webbing over the cable guides. Describe what that is and how you apply that to the stand.
Okay, the tubular webbing is 1-inch climbing spec webbing. You can buy it like climbing store retailers, REI, Backcountry. And what it is it's a nylon sling material that's hollow inside.
Yeah.
I had some to originally. I built a lineman's belt for my rock climbing harness.
Okay.
And what I do is, since it's hollow, you just unbolt the cable, and the 1-inch is big enough to slide over the cable eye and the cable. You know, you cut it to length of the cable, and then just bolt your cable back on. And the whole purpose of it is to keep the rubber boots from squeaking against the cable.
Okay.
I know Uncle Lou sells cable silencers as well. So if you don't want to go through the trouble of the tube of 11, but the tube of 11, you know, you put it on and again, you forget it. I don't think you could wear that stuff out.
Right. You know, I wear muck boots and they,
so you got the screen.
Yeah, I got that on the outside of it. It's not full rubber all the way up. So I've never had a scenario where I've had my rubber boot squeak against the cable. So, but I can definitely see how that would spook a deer if, you know, one walked in, yeah, you're turning around in your stand or whatnot.
Yeah, you walk through some grass with some dew on it, any kind of water, and you get up there and that rubber boot hits that cable, you get a noticeably loud squeak.
Right. Right. And you say from a durability standpoint, once you've put that on, you've never noticed any wear on it yet.
Not at all.
Okay. All right. All right. Now the next thing here is XOP Maximus seat platform and cushion, comfort over the stock assault setup. Talk to us about, 'cause you're running a lone wolf assault and so what are you doing with this XOP seat platform?
I am running one of the original Lone Wolf Assaults. It's the 8-pound model.
Yeah.
So the newer assaults come with the bigger seat. So the original came with a smaller seat. I actually use that seat now for a saddle platform, which I had bought the XOP Maximus seat for, and I realized that that platform was bigger than I needed to stand on for a saddle, so I said, let me try it on the Assault, and what it does is it gives me about 3 more inches away from the tree, and of course it comes with the, you know, the padded cushion that flips upside down for a leaning cushion as well.
Yeah.
Now, it did add weight to my 8-pound Assault, but I guess since I started with probably one of the lightest cast platforms that you can get, and I've kind of added to it with the paracord, with the seat, with my other mods, I've got my stand up to almost the 11-pound Assault that they have now. However, I got the added benefit of the noise dampening and the larger seat with the bigger cushion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I know that now, because I just got some in the mail, Lone Wolf makes a bigger seat for their assaults, and they have the thicker pads now, too, I believe.
If I'm not mistaken, that the Assault 2 seat is the same size as the Alpha now.
Right, absolutely. Yep, that's it. Yep. And so on this XOP mod that you've talked about, it allows you to be further away from the tree. Does that put you too close to the edge of the assault platform?
It does not, but I'm probably 5'11", wear a size 10.5 to 11 shoe, so I find the 8-pound Assault or really any assault gives me plenty of room. I fold the seat up when I stand up, so I don't really notice any different in that and the other one over quite a bit of comfort for the extra
right.
2 to 3 inches you gain in the seat.
Absolutely.
It allows you kind of slouch down a little bit where that other one you're straight up the whole time.
Okay. And that cushion just makes for long sits a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean the cushion flattens out. It's definitely not a hunt comfort, you know, with the gel, right. But it's good enough.
Right. Okay. All right. So the next mod that you did, and this is with the older, Assault. Talk to us about this Batwing mod that you've done.
Right. The older Assault comes with the regular V bracket like you would see on the sticks.
Yep.
I originally switched it out for an XOP V bracket that's about an inch longer, which kicked it away from the tree and added a little comfort. But the V brackets just don't give you the versatility of hanging like the bat wing does. So I wound up with the bat wing, and I've ran the bat wing for about 2 years, and I can't imagine using another stand without a bat wing or the 6-point bracket that XOP has.
Yeah. And just allows you to sit vertical in a crooked tree.
Well, you're looking at 4 contact points on the bat wing, and I think there's 6 on the XOP. And as long as you're grabbing on any 2 of those contact points, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
And, yeah, and I think it's something most people don't realize until you use a Lone Wolf or XOP with that. It's just not something you think about. And then once you use it, it's like, can't do without it.
Right. And that's crazy. Before I started using a Lone Wolf, I had a couple hang-on stands that were, you know, they were steel, but the only way they would be flat is in basically a telephone pole type tree.
Climber tree.
Yeah, climber tree, absolutely. And when I borrowed from a buddy my very first Lone Wolf set just for a hunt before I bought one, I climbed up in this crooked tree with my 4 sticks, and I sat in there and I got it straightened and I got it leveled, and it was leaning back a little bit and to the right, and I'm just like, how do people not hunt with this thing, right? And that right there, that simple design is what changed my approach towards hunting. It's like one of those things. I actually did a podcast with it where about it, where I actually talked about the products that influence the way I hunt the most, and the Lone Wolf system is definitely one of them.
Yeah, no doubt. A little backstory, I guess about 6 years ago, maybe 7, is when I went. I basically got rid of all climbers and went 100% to lock-ons. And a former guest you had on, Mr. Warren Womack, mm-hmm. who is also from Louisiana, he turned me on to the lock-ons, which they're no longer selling them. But I picked up a lock-on because it was also an 8-pound stand. It was one of the lightest production stands at the time. And it's a great hanging stand. It hangs real well, but it doesn't have adjustability, and it's not the cast. So what I noticed is several times I was hanging on a 45 where you could hardly stand up or be pinned against a tree. And as it went on, you know, I just learned to deal with it, pick better trees, I guess you would say. And then I got more involved on the hunting beast, and a buddy of mine also, and we kept hearing Lone Wolf, Lone Wolf, Lone Wolf, and found out that Lone Wolf had a lighter stand. It was just like finding a diamond in the rough. And he winded up picking up one, and just the first time I looked at it, I'm like, that's pretty cool. It levels. Yeah, that's nice. And I tried his out, and I said, okay, I got to get one. So he winded up finding me one used, and like you said, it goes in any tree. It doesn't matter really the angle because the platform levels, and then, of course, the bat wing deals with curves and knots and everything else.
Right, right, absolutely. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, I don't know, this is just me being blunt. I hate it when people will bitch about the price of a Lone Wolf tree stand, saying, well, I can't afford that, it's too expensive. Well, you really, if you're a run and gun hunter, you only need one. And it is so efficient that it literally trumps every other tree stand that is out on the market. And I don't know, people just don't get it. They're so caught up with price and you know, I don't know. I'm just bitching at this point.
No, I get it. The price is steep, but I say try one, and then if you can't afford it, save for it or find one used.
Right, right.
It's, believe me, it's well worth it. And if you bought one used, you could turn around and sell it in 3 years and probably lose $20, $30 on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those 8-pound models, like I said, if you can find them, they go for a ridiculous price, almost the same as a newsstand.
Yeah, I hear that.
So it's well worth it to try it.
Yep.
And if you don't like it, keep doing what you're doing.
Yep, that's right. All right. So we talked about the Batwing mod. And what's this waist belt that you're talking about?
The waist belt, it's the Molly waist belt. You can find them on Amazon, Army Surplus. Myself, personally, I only use the waist belt. They do come with shoulder straps, right, but I find with the waist belt, the stock shoulder straps or any regular shoulder straps are fine. And all that's doing is distributing the load to your hips and taking it off your shoulders.
Right. And that's for packing in and out?
Right, packing in and out. You'll turn my stand's fully rigged out. It's probably right around 18 to 20 pounds, depending on clothes or what I have on it.
Right.
And it packs just as well as an 8-pound stand with no Molly belt. So
okay.
You take a 20, 30-pound stand, put a Molly belt on it, and you just don't realize the load's there.
All right. And so how far are you typically going from your truck to the time you get to your stand location?
That can range from 200 yards to 2 miles.
Yeah, right. And I can see at 2 miles that even a quote unquote light amount for a run and gun setup might be cumbersome.
Right. And you throw in some hills and then you cut that distance in half and it still becomes heavy.
Yeah.
The biggest issue here is the heat and humidity.
Yeah.
You know,
drains you.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what you're packing. You're going to be sweating. You're going to be miserable. So it helps to have anything possible that's going to help some efficiency.
Okay. And so when you get to the tree stand, you got your shoulder straps on there and you got your Molly waist belt. Does all that stay on the bottom of the stand or do you take it off before you go up?
Nope. All that stays on my stand.
Okay.
I'm packing. So I got the stand. I have 3 sticks on the stand. And I switched last year. I'm actually running Hawk Helium sticks now with the dual steps.
Yep.
I'm running 2 that are cut down to 21 inches, so they're the same length as my platform on the outer edges, and they're sitting in stick talons. Then I have a middle full-length Hawk stick that has Lone Wolf V brackets on it so that
right.
It nests to the stand like a Lone Wolf. All 3 sticks have homemade Versa buttons and rope mods. And so I walk up to the tree. I reach back and I unhook my strap with the gator clip that we can talk about later as to what it does.
Well, let's talk about it right now.
Okay, well, what that does is I permanently mount a 1-inch strap using my cable bolt. So I unbolt my cable bolt, I put a hole in the strap, and I bolt it back on. Then the other side has the same 1-inch strap with a alligator clip sewn onto it or doubled over and bolted back. And the alligator clip, I guess the easiest way to describe it is if you've ever seen a summit climber, it's the strap that Summit uses. Some trail camera manufacturers are using them. It's just, you know, you hit the button and it opens up like an alligator's mouth.
Yep.
Okay, so what that does is that's a permanent strap on my stand. I don't have to worry about looking for a bungee cord. I don't have to unhook bungee cords. I personally don't like bungee cords.
Yeah.
So this strap stays on my stand, and it holds my middle stick to my stand.
Okay.
It's over my other two, but the main purpose is to hold that middle stick. The other two are sitting in stick talons, so they're not going anywhere. So it's holding that middle stick. I can reach behind my back. I can hit that alligator clip, and I can pull that strap open. I grab that middle stick. I pull it off of my back, and I set it on the tree. That middle stick has a one-step aider on it. So I'm hanging it about chest high, which gives me, you know, over a traditional no aider, you're hanging at the most like knee high. So I'm gaining about 3 foot with that aider.
Gotcha.
I hang that first one. I climb to the top of that stick, and I hook on my lineman's belt. I reach off, and I pop one stick out of the talons, and I hang the other stick. Depending on height, if I need to get higher, I do carry a couple slings in a dump pouch on my harness. If I need the height, I'll grab a sling, and I'll put a sling on that second stick as well, which will give me some more height. Then I climb up, then I grab my third stick, and I hang it. Same thing. If I need more height, I'll grab a sling. With one sling on the bottom and two sticks spaced out, I'm roughly around 18 foot.
You can get 18 with two sticks and an aider on each one.
And, well, if I'm going with an aider on each one, I'm definitely getting above 18. I can usually do 18 with one aider and two sticks. If I add two aiders, I'm more comfortably spaced at 18 foot. If I'm going three sticks, three aiders, I'm definitely getting to around 20.
Okay. So then two questions. How long is your aider that you like to put on your sticks, and how tall are you?
I'm 5'11", and my aider that stays on my bottom stick all the time is roughly 24 inches.
Okay, so 2 foot roughly.
Yep, I'm carrying two slings in my pouch. I forget the length of the slings, but they're pretty long, so sometimes I'll double them, or sometimes I'll triple them, just depending on whatever I need.
Right, and a sling is different from an aider, right?
Not necessarily. I guess I talk about them in the same context. All of my aiders, slings, are just that tubular webbing that I make to whatever length I want to. Aider, I guess most people refer to as like a multi-step. They make a three-step, they make a five-step aiders. They're all made for rock climbing. And it's basically like a rope ladder.
Okay.
I like just a single step. I don't like a multi-step. There's just too much movement. I just don't find a real benefit. And since I'm only 5'11", if I go with a five-step aider, there's no way I can hang it high enough to take advantage of all five steps.
Right. I gotcha.
So I find a single one works best.
Do you have any problems with finding a good foot grip climbing up or down in the dark?
I do not. The key to it is to make sure that when your foot goes in that aider, the whole side of your foot is against the tree.
Gotcha.
To give that stability. If it's not, then you're going to run into issues. Coming down at dark, I wrap that aider. I make a step out of it. I put in like a 3/8-inch rope in that tubular webbing to give it some bulk. And then I do a paracord weave over it. And what I generally use is the paracord with the reflective tracers on it, so that when you hit it with a light, it's reflecting.
Okay.
And it's just really a matter of taking your time coming down. I mean,
yeah. Right. All right. So you with that setup, you can get about 18 feet, if not higher, depending on how many sticks and aiders you use.
the adders, limbs, you know, what have you.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one thing.
Let me touch on one thing, too, now.
Yeah, go
for it. I use the rock climbing harness, and I get, most people probably have no idea who Brian Landry is. If you say Sea Big Bear, which is what I go by on most forums, you'll pick up three or four more. If you say the one stick guy, then I get a ton of emails about the one stick guy. So gotcha. Backtrack about 5 years, I was only using one stick with my assault, with my lock on and a rock climbing harness, and I was just climbing with one stick. Finding Dan Infault, the hunting beast and stuff, getting more into bed hunting, moving to the place I'm hunting now with more trash trees, I find it more convenient to go with multiple sticks. But I'm still using my rock harness. I wouldn't use anything else. I always have that availability. If I need to get extra height, I can get that extra height out of that last stick, no matter how high it is.
Gotcha. All right. So you are the inventor/manufacturer of those, the stick talons, correct?
Correct.
Right. And you've sent me some, what I think about beginning of last season, maybe. Talk to the listeners about what the stick talons are and why they would benefit a run-and-gun style hunter.
Gotcha. Okay, so basically what the stick talons are they're a set is four. They mount to the outside rail of your stand, and they will hold any one-inch square tubing sticks, and they also work with the flat helium and leverage sticks. The idea came from Lone Wolf's stick quiver, which I thought was a great idea. I just didn't want to have to remove something from my stand and keep up with it while it was in a hung position.
Right.
So I tinker around with stuff, and I got something that I felt would work. Then the added benefit, I realized, well, now all of a sudden I don't need paracord loops off of my harness to hold my sticks. They just stay in the talons, and I pop them off as I go up.
Right.
And I had a buddy that I showed, and he's like, man, you got to make me a set. So I made him a set. A few more buddies on the Hunting Beast made them a set, and then it kind of turned into a small business.
Yeah.
So the benefit of the talons is it's a way to transport your sticks from the time you leave the truck till the time you're ready to pop them off as you're climbing up, versus it's just strictly a transport system.
Right.
And then the other benefit is I sell a lot of them for other model stands, Millenniums, Muddies, Hawk, XOP, really any stand stick combination. You know, if somebody was to call me, we could probably work out something that would work. So basically it turns in a non-Lone Wolf stand or non-XOP stand into a stand that now your sticks nest with.
Gotcha.
And if it's strictly packing, you know, you're looking at, then I suggest just use what Lone Wolf design, great design. If you're looking for packing and something to climb the tree with, or some versatility, maybe you want five sticks, but you want them flat to the stand, that's the benefit.
Right. So that's something that I've always played around with in my head. And this summer, my goal at some point is to, I mean, for those guys who are really run-and-gun hunters, how much time, I thought about it a lot this last year, or not last year, but the previous year when I was doing a lot of running and gunning. You sit there, how much time do you think a guy wastes When he gets to his tree, he has to take his pack and his stand off. He has to detach his sticks, and then he has to go up the tree, right? And then some cases probably go back down and grab a stick, then go back up, then go back down. And there's several different methods of how to make as little trips back down the tree as possible. But are you able, with these stick talons, to go up the tree in one trip and not have to come back down for anything?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
I'm running three sticks, so I do it differently than most people. The standard is four sticks. You know, like 95% of customers are running four sticks of some sort.
Right.
So what most people are doing is, and most guys run a backpack or something. So most guys walk to their tree. They still take their stand off their back. They take their backpack off of the stand, which the stick talons hold your sticks on the outer edges of your stand, so you got the whole middle freed up. A lot of people like that. That's where their backpack goes. That's where their extra clothes go. So they get to the stand, take the tree, take the stand off, pull the backpack off, pull the clothes off, put them on the ground, tie them on their pull-up rope, whatever. They take the sticks stacking the talons. So you have four sticks. You have two stack sticks in each talon. So they take the top stack sticks off of each talon, and most people hang two from the ground, and then they climb from there.
Okay.
So most people don't use an aider, so they hang that first stick at knee high, and then they're able to hang that second stick from the ground without climbing. And then from there, they throw the stand on their back, and they go.
And you're doing all this with a lineman's belt, right?
Correct. Okay. I'm a little different because I use three sticks, and that first stick is up chest high.
Right, because you got that aider.
Yep, I'm not removing anything off my back, and because of that aider, I'm eliminating one stick. I'm getting the same height out of three sticks as what most people get out of four because of that distance on that first stick that they're hanging.
Okay, I gotcha. So then when you get to the tree, you're able to reach behind your back or off the bottom and pull off the sticks, no problem, without any noise or without the bases getting caught in the stand or getting caught anywhere else?
Correct. It does take a little bit of practice. Okay, so you have those two sticks, and if you, to envision it on the phone, take your hand like you're doing a curl. Curl it up, and you're reaching right by your ear. That's where the top of that stick is going to be. Okay? So you're going to take that stick, and you're going to push it straight away from you. And then once it pops out that top talon, you're going to pull it back into you as you're rotating away from your body, and it pops out of that bottom talon away from your stand.
Right.
And what I recommend for everybody, and I do it, my V brackets are wrapped in gutted paracord if you want to use cell strips, some kind of something, because you're dealing with stuff behind your head, there's a possibility you're going to bump into something. Yeah. So that's just part of the whole routine. If everything's covered, then it doesn't really matter what hits. But I find that to be a lot less movement than taking a stand off of your back, having sticks swinging off your side, or making multiple trips up and down a tree.
Okay, I gotcha. So that was my goal is to, and I'll be honest, the stick talons that you gave me, I didn't even have an opportunity to mess around with them like they're designed to be messed around with yet. But that's my goal this upcoming season is to get my run and gun set up to where I can go up a tree with a lineman's belt, basically hook on, set my bow on the ground, hook it to a bow rope, and go up, and then basically just pull my bow up when I'm completely done.
Gotcha. Well, we'll definitely have to talk after, because you already have an obsolete model.
Okay, I gotcha.
they've already been through round one testing and on to the next greatest. But yeah, so to add one thing to that, if you're looking to make one trip up and that's it, then you need a pull rope with some kind of grapple, some kind of hook on it, because there's no point in tying anything on. Because what happens when you tie stuff on and you're weaving in and out of limbs, then so is your rope. So you get a grapple hook with a, added to your rope, or just an S hook or something. When you get up there, you just drop it down and fish up whatever you need.
Gotcha.
Versus a tangled mess.
Right. I can definitely see how that would play. You know, that'd be almost no point of going up in one time if you have to come down and untangle all the bow rope. All right. So that's the stick talons. Have you gotten a lot of good feedback from that?
You know, I had a guy ask me that the other day. I probably sold around 500 or so, and I've had one return. The guy just didn't like the way they sat on his stand, which, you know, not everybody's going to be happy. They're a very niche product. Yeah. If you're not a mobile guy, then they're really not going to appeal to you. Like I said, the Lone Wolf, the way they nest, it's hard to improve on that. So there's really no point in it if you're just looking for transport. Unless you know you want that flat packing, have the space for your backpack or something, maybe there's some benefit there. But the ultimate benefit is when you walk to the tree, you no longer have to hang sticks off your side or go up and down the tree multiple times.
Right.
And really, all of my whatever I do to my stand is geared toward efficiency and quiet.
Yeah.
I don't get out that much because of obligations. I'm driving 3 hours.
Right.
So I can't risk having something go wrong. It's usually 80 to 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes are thick. I don't want to walk to a tree and spend 15 minutes on their ground playing with equipment and taking my time to go up the tree. Now, I understand a lot of guys say, you know, you need to go slow, you need to be quiet, you need to have as least movement as possible. That's great if it's 30, 40 degrees out, no mosquitoes, and you got all day to do it. I'm a fairly patient guy, I guess you would say, but you know, inevitably, if I'm swatting mosquitoes and I'm sweating buckets, when I get to the tree, if I'm 100 yards away from a bedded buck at some point, I'm just going to say, screw it, and I'm going up the tree. So the whole goal is to make it as efficient as possible. I'm not trying to race up the tree, but I'm also not trying to stay on the ground. My goal is to get up the tree efficient, quietly, get the thermocell running, and have a little bit of comfort.
Right. Absolutely. Now, do you carry a pack with you when you go in, or is everything that you need strapped to the stand?
Most of the time, everything I need strapped to the stand.
Or in your pockets, like a rattling antlers or grunt call.
My phone is my GPS. My headlamp is usually in a pocket. My thermocell stays strapped in the thermocell case underneath the seat. That case has the extra refills and stuff in it. Bow in hand with quiver. I'll usually have a compass with me. And that's basically it for a regular trip. If I'm going to run trail cameras, I'll usually bring a, I use an Alps fanny pack with the shoulder straps that'll yep. shoulder strap to the stand that'll have camera in it. With, I also use a Kingston Light card reader to check my cameras.
Right.
And there'll be some extra cards in there. So if I roll up on a camera, I'll pull the card out, pop it in there, download the images to my phone, throw the card back in there, erase maybe some extra batteries, and then keep going.
Right. So when it's all said and done, every time you step in the timber, how much weight do you think you're carrying?
It varies depending on where I'm going. It can be as light as, say, 3 pounds if I'm going with a saddle setup, or it can be as heavy if I'm going with my stand, extra clothes, 3 sticks, cameras, around 30, 32 pounds.
Okay. And what do you, what's the temperature usually get down there when you say cold?
When I say cold, cold is anything below freezing.
Okay.
Really, anything around freezing is cold. This past year, we had winter in one weekend, and it got down around 20, and that was it. It was over.
Yeah. I lived in Alabama for about a year, and it hit 34 degrees, and it snowed, and snow accumulated on the ground, and people lost their damn mind. It was
They shut down the town. That's it. No school. You can't buy water at the grocery store. It's over.
People don't show up to work. Oh, it's like the apocalypse. It was hilarious. It's hilarious.
Yeah. But I will say this. You know what's odd about down here is when that, you know, I'm 38, so once in 38 years, I've seen an accumulation of about a foot. And when we get a foot of snow, there's not hardly a tree around here that can hold a foot of snow.
Yeah.
The pine trees, limbs are just breaking right and left. We have no power. It's pretty miserable around here when you got a foot of snow. And our deer, they freak out. They go on lockdown. You can't even find a track.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is.
When's your rut happen?
Our rut is usually around between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
But it's odd. Louisiana has ruts in the northwestern and western part of the state as early as October. Man. Then as you move across, you got some in November, and then the eastern and then southern, you're looking at December, and then sometimes as late as March, you can have those still being bred. We just don't have there's no way you can say, okay, in this 2 weeks I'm going to take vacation because I know there's going to be some rut activity.
Right.
It doesn't really happen like that. It's kind of a trickle rut. I know they describe it as a bell-shaped curve, where ours is a really wide bell.
Yeah, I hear that. Let's see here. So any other tree stand silencing strategies or any type of additional mods that you use?
Yeah, if I'm running buckles, I don't run buckles on my sticks, I run ropes, but the buckle on my stand, I like to use a can koozie, a neoprene koozie. I know some people buy the Yak grips, which is the neoprene grips for kayak paddles.
Yeah.
I just like taking a koozie, cut it in half, put it over the buckle, sew it back up. Because your buckle is, the most likelihood for noise as you swing it around a tree. So I know people use inner tubes. I went the inner tube route. They just don't last as long as a koozie does. So I prefer a koozie or Yak grips.
Gotcha. Yeah, I hear that. All right. So anything else?
That pretty much takes care of everything I have done to the stand.
Gotcha.
except the quiver mouth that's on the side, and I guess that's pretty much, you know, that's just a convenience thing.
Yeah, for sure. Now, when you get into the hunting season, and, you know, you got, you said you got three kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And hunting is limited. How many, and you're going in and setting up every single time, how many times a year are you, roughly, your best guess, are you tearing up and setting, or setting up and tearing down?
Probably 50, 60 times.
Yeah.
Because I may make three sets in one day.
Yeah. So you'll tear down, move. If there's nothing there for a midday, go. And if there's nothing yet, you'll go again for an evening set in the same location.
Yeah, it's a good possibility. I'll go in the morning, hunt somewhere, move for midday, hunt somewhere, move for an afternoon, and hunt somewhere.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And that's just saying that all sets, you know, go. There's a good chance I could throw up a set, see deer moving, tear down, move closer, and then, you know, after that's hunt, move again. So I might have two sets per hunt.
Yeah. So do you...
It's nothing for me to walk up to a tree and throw up and tear down. That there's nothing holding me to that tree whatsoever.
Right, absolutely. So do you ever have an instance where you'll bring an extra tree stand in the timber with you, set it up, and then leave it up, and then come back another time with it, you know, no sticks, just the stand in the tree, and then come back to it another time?
Nope, can't. Only own one.
Okay, gotcha.
It's like Mr. Warren says, it's in three places. It's either in my garage, in my truck, or under my butt.
Yeah. Yep.
I do use a saddle on occasion, so the saddle will be in my truck as well. But in 6 years, I have yet to leave that stand in the woods. I mean, even if I was planning on coming back for a morning hunt after an evening hunt, it's highly likely I just take it out with me. You never know, in the morning the wind could be slightly off and I have to tear it down and set it anyway, so I just soon have it. If the wind's off, if it rains at night, I don't want my seat cushion out there. It's just as easy for me to tear it down and move it as it is to leave it.
Right. So when it's all said and done, from the moment you get to the tree that you're going to set up in to the time where you sit down on that stand, or, you know, hang your bow up or do whatever it is to, you know, basically you're ready to hunt, how much time does that typically take?
If I'm hustling, it's a rut hunt and I'm not really worried about noise, less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
If I'm setting up on bedding, it can range anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
If I'm taking one stick and climbing, I can still be at 20 foot with one stick on a straight limbless tree in less than 5 minutes.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's pretty quick, man. I can throw my on a decent tree where I don't have to do any trimming. I can get up in right around that 5 minutes, four sticks and my set, in 4 minutes. And if I got to trim, you know, trim out any shooting lanes, I'll do that as well. But yeah, 5 minutes is an average. Like you said, if you're hauling ass.
Yeah. Are you coming up and down for each stick, or how are you currently doing it?
Well, it just depends. I have loops in my lineman's belt that I'll put the V bracket in those in these additional loops. So I'll set my first one. I'll go down and get another one. I'll climb up. And then by this time I have my stand on my back, and I will. So I'll put my first stick on. I'll put my second stick on. Pull off the loop. The third stick. Pull off the loop. Fourth stick. Pull the stand off my back, set it up, go back down, put my pack, hook my bow up, and then go up for the last time. So basically it's two, sometimes three, depending on if I have to trim any branches.
Which is pretty, I guess, pretty standard in most people that I talk to. Yeah, I'm that guy when he unloads groceries, you know, I want him only make one trip, man.
you're the guy who goes to the doctor with the wrist problems. Yeah. Well, how'd you hurt your hand? I was carrying groceries.
Carrying groceries, man. You can only make one trip.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Landry, man, if people want to go and find out more about your stick talons, where should we send them?
That would be mobilehuntinggear.com.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thanks for taking time to do this, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Good talking to you.
And there you have it, another podcast in the books. Huge shout out to Brian for coming on the show, talking about his run and gun setup. Huge shout out to each and every one of you who has taken the time to download this podcast and listen to it. And huge shout out to the partners of this podcast, Exodus, Ripcord, Deer Lab, Bighorn Outfitters, Lone Wolf, Ozonix, Gearhead, and Wasp. Thank you guys very much for your support. And please go out and support those partners of this podcast because they support me. And yeah, there's that. If you haven't already, please join me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Please go to iTunes and leave a review of this podcast. And if you want to be on this podcast, whether it's a story about a buck that you've been chasing, a hunter profile podcast, a product review podcast, a BS session, hit me up via Facebook and we can talk about it and maybe I can get you on the podcast. Hopefully everybody's summer is going very well. You've been able to spend time with family because at the end of the day, family is the most important thing. It's even more important, believe it or not, than these stupid deer that we chase throughout the entire year. But yeah, thank you very much for tuning in. And if you're going to be in a tree, please wear your damn safety harness.